We're here to unveil our nominees for the annual Academy Awards.
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role are...
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role are...
The nominees for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role are...
For Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role, the nominees are...
A number of careers are clearly going to be made as a result of these nominations today.
In the category of Best Achievement in Directing, for Best Animated Feature Film, the nominees are...
For Best Original Screenplay, the nominees are...
Screenplay based on material previously produced or published.
And finally, I'm pleased to announce that the films selected as the Best Picture nominees are...
From Tuscaloosa, Alabama, this is Aspect Radio. I'm Corey Kraft.
I wanted to be like, not quite my tempo. Yeah. And I am Ben Flanagan. Welcome to another episode of Aspect Radio. It's been a while, but we're back, and we've kind of let the holiday movie season sort of pass us by in between shows here, and it gives us just enough to talk about here as the awards season looms and really hits its stride, and we're getting a really clear idea of what to make of it as the Oscar nominations sort of rear their head and will take place on January 15th and the Oscars later in February. But Corey, we like to follow this stuff. We like to sort of prognosticate and predict what might happen when the Oscars roll around, even before the nominations are announced. And with all these precursors and guilds and critics associations making their presence known and ideas clear to the world of what they think is the best and not really separating themselves really from each other until recently, when I think Jean-Luc Godard's latest movie was named Best Picture by one of those guilds. That was a bit of a surprise, but the usual suspects are out there, and so we have a clear understanding of what will be nominated for Oscars, and there are a few outliers, I think, trying to make their case and trying to become included in this party that we overly obsess over year after year. So, Corey, with just about a week to go now until these Oscar nominations are announced, let's jump right into it. Tell me what you think are absolute locks at this point to get Best Picture nominations.
I think there are four. And I think three of them are going to be pretty obvious, because I think these three movies are the three movies that are in contention for the win. Those three are Birdman, Boyhood, and The Imitation Game. These three movies are locked in there pretty firmly. They have heads of steam behind them. They have all the buzz right now. The fourth lock, and this is going to sound strange, but because it has shown up, it has apparently displayed a massive amount of love industry-wide, showing up virtually in all of these precursor guild nominations, is Wes Anderson's The Grand Budapest Hotel, a March 2014 release that I think you would be hard-pressed to look at and say, you know, looking at all of this precursor love, would not be essentially a shoe-in for an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture, which would mark Wes Anderson's first appearance in that category.
Yeah, at this point, I think it's going to happen for sure. There's a lot of mystery surrounding how many nominations the category will have year after year now. I personally wish they would top it off at 10 and just create an Academy top 10 every year, or just go back to the five. I don't like all this wiggle room that they have and that they leave, and this mystery that we're left with as far as, are they going to have 8 nominations, 9? Are they going to go to the full 10? Just make it one or the other. I don't understand that thinking. But you're right. I think that those four are locks to get nominated. At this point, too, Corey, I think Foxcatcher is probably going to get a nomination for Best Picture.
That's one of the ones I'm struggling with.
Yeah.
There are a couple less certain but still fairly likely movies. And then there are some where I'm kind of on the fence about it. And on the fence, Foxcatcher is one I'm on the fence about.
Okay, and so the less certain but still likely category there, I think, includes Foxcatcher, maybe American Sniper, maybe Theory of Everything.
I think Theory of Everything is fairly likely.
Yeah.
I think Dan Gilroy's Nightcrawler is fairly likely. If only, again, you look at that precursor guild love, it's been popping up all over the place, too. Damien Chazelle's Whiplash, little indie movie that could this year, is... not the most likely, but more likely. And I think David Fincher's Gone Girl is in that category.
You know, it's weird. I think Nightcrawler and Whiplash will not both make it. I think one or the other will.
I think that one or the other will replace Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
I don't think Foxcatcher is a guarantee. On the fence, I would put Foxcatcher, American Sniper,
I would love nothing more than to see a movie like Nightcrawler get nominated for Best Picture. You and I fawned over that.
Yeah, last it's time a great movie.
And yeah, it's just one of those that you wouldn't normally expect. I know that there was a lot of talk about Jake Gyllenhaal getting a nomination and that perhaps being that movie's lone nomination, but you're seeing it pop up in the Writers Guild nominations and in Producers Guild. So it seems, like you said, likely that this could sneak in, and I would be tremendously excited about it. The same goes for Whiplash. This is a movie that was on a lot of these lists, these prediction lists early on as being a film that would get nominated for Best Picture. And that always really kind of surprised me because it's a movie that hasn't really played widely. Mm-hmm. And it's not a movie that a lot of people are really talking about, probably because it hasn't been in a lot of movie theaters. So people haven't had a lot of access to it, even though I think it's a really accessible movie that a lot of people would really like and talk about and recommend to each other if they saw it. But it's another one of those that I'd be a little surprised, even still, even after it's popped up on all these lists, if it got a Best Picture nomination.
I mean, you're right. If this were a nationwide poll, Whiplash would be, you know, it'd have trouble cracking that Best Picture list. But because, you know, it's mostly, I mean, the Academy is comprised of film industry professionals, and that sort of community has taken note of Whiplash since it premiered at Sundance last January. I mean, this has been a movie on people's radar since then. So it's got to be at least more familiar to, I would say, the Academy voting public than it would be to the general public. Though I hope that after the nominations come out, people actually see it, because I think it's a tremendous movie.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In four, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
I don't know.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference!
So I think Gone Girl gets in. Personally,
I'm thinking so too, if only because it would be the only movie that has grossed more than $100 million out of all of these nominees.
Which is insane, but I think it's going to take something's place. And let's get into sort of eliminating some of these titles out of contention. And sitting at 100% with, I think, about 84 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes right now is the movie Selma.
See, I didn't bring that up because recent developments in the media regarding this film's accuracy seem to have shaken it, to have shaken its chances. Now, the thing about Selma, which I've already had the privilege to see, is that it's great. And if people actually get in the theater to see it, I don't think that there will be left with any doubt. It is a tremendously powerful movie. I think it's going to be a hit. I think people are going to talk about it. It might be like we saw in 2006 with Letters from Iwo Jima, just sort of an out-of-nowhere late bloomer, even though I don't think you could really say Selma is an out-of-nowhere movie quite at this late stage. Not as much, say, as Clint Eastwood's American Sniper seems to be this year, which came out of nowhere with an enormous head of award steam in the last couple weeks.
Well, it makes sense. It's a Clint Eastwood movie. It's got an A-list star at the forefront of it. It's serious subject matter based on a true story familiar to a lot of Americans. So that makes sense to me. But with Selma, what surprises me is it had a pretty big head of steam coming into the season. And it seems like everybody who sees it, including yourself, really likes this movie a lot, except for these people behind the scenes who are disappointed with the so-called inaccuracies specifically related to the portrayal of Lyndon B. Johnson, and which, that is killing its chances right now.
Which I can speak to as somebody who's seen the movie, seems to be completely mischaracterized. Lyndon Johnson in the film is not characterized as adversarial. If anything, he's well-meaning but sort of reluctant, and history kind of bears that out as a characterization. But I'm not a student of history. I do, however, remember recent history in 2012 with Catherine Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty, something similar happening to that, and it seems like 2 weeks after Zero Dark Thirty got kind of shut out, any possible controversy it may have sparked was dust in the wind. It's almost as if it was completely manufactured to kill its awards chances.
Is Ed Asner behind this one too?
One wonders. Today, actually, Gay Talese came out and said, hey, I was there, and this movie gets it right.
Well, it seems like there are a lot of people out there who are voicing that opinion and are on the other side of that fence.
Right.
But at this point, it seems like the damage is done.
I still think it's going to get in.
Yeah.
I still think it's going to get in, and I still think it's going to show up in a bunch of categories. Is it going to be as strong of a contender as it might have been or possibly should be? That remains to be seen. But I think it's in for picture, and I think Ava DuVernay, its director, is in the best director category because the Academy might not necessarily like to court this type of controversy, but they sure do seem to like to make history. And Ava DuVernay would be the first female African-American nominee in that category. And what's more, she totally deserves it.
Hold that thought on the director category.
Okay.
We'll stick with Best Picture for now. Movies that we can eliminate from it. We get to this point in the season where we think movies are going to contend, but it's before anybody has even seen the films. Movies like this include, say, Into the Woods,
yes,
which are these prestige projects directed by a guy who has a film that won Best Picture. It's got a big cast, including Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt and Anna Kendrick and Johnny Depp and all these folks, and it's a Disney film, correct?
Uh-huh.
A musical, and so people just assume this is going to have a place in the awards season. Then people see it, and it's not the case.
Well, because it kind of sucked.
So that seems to be the mode of thinking people have. So let's eliminate that.
Yeah.
How about Angelina Jolie's movie Unbroken?
Now, I think I was fairly bullish on this movie, of course, sight unseen. If not on this very podcast, then certainly in our personal off-mic communication.
Yeah. Now, you said it a few times on the podcast.
I think you're right.
You're on the record.
Yeah, then I saw it. Yeah. You can see, of course, exactly what they were aiming for,
yeah,
which is to be in the thick of this conversation. And it may still be. It's making money. Audiences like it. I don't know that I'd 100% count it out. All I can safely say is that I don't think it has what it takes to contend. I mean, if it were nominated, it would be a worse reviewed Best Picture nominee than the much maligned Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close. And that's going by Rotten Tomatoes numbers. Now, I don't know how much worth that actually has, but I can say this. I kind of like Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Let's move on. So, yeah, just so Corey doesn't embarrass himself
more than Unbroken.
Any more than he already has. That's, more than Unbroken.
That's
okay.
What I was saying. I don't think Unbroken is good at all.
Okay. So that's out, you think?
If there's anything good in the world,
how
we'll
about
see.
Okay, so I think that in the technical categories, this is going to rack up a few nominations and perhaps a win or two. Maybe Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, which we talked about.
Yeah.
I think that its major category contention is dwindling.
Yeah, it's out.
It already has, anyway.
It's dead and gone.
Yeah. That's unfortunate, I think.
So you say.
Yeah, so I say. I've seen it twice. I love that movie. I was really pulling for it, but we got to be realistic here. Mr. Turner, is this a movie that could sneak in to Best Picture?
I don't think so. If it had come out in like November, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's going to do what Mike Lee movies do and surprise in a few categories, in cinematography, in costume design, in screenplay, possibly even in actor, but I don't think it'll break through in picture.
This was at Cannes, right?
Yeah.
And this made a lot of noise back then.
Yeah, and so did Foxcatcher.
Yeah, well, I'm personally surprised, and it's a little telling that people are talking about Mr. Turner right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that suggests to me that it could be a surprise come nomination day.
I think it will pop up in more categories than is currently expected, but I don't think any of the big ones.
Okay, so you say there are three contenders in Boyhood, Birdman, and The Imitation Game.
Yeah.
I say The Imitation Game will not win Best Picture. I think it comes down to Boyhood and Birdman.
I think it comes down to Boyhood, man. I don't think Birdman has a shot. I think Boyhood.
Well, you hate Birdman, so you're hoping that happens.
I still don't think that anything but Boyhood is going to win.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
So today, if the Oscars are today, Boyhood wins.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if the Oscars are whenever the Oscars are, Boyhood wins. I don't think anything. I mean, what are they going to do to?
I think that's going to be a theme of this season, is that the field is pretty dry in a lot of categories.
In a lot of categories, but I mean, even if it wasn't, one, Boyhood is just sort of a once in a lifetime cinematic event. And two, you'd have to be like more cynical than Harvey Weinstein to levy any measure of like dirty politicking against it, because what could you say about Boyhood? There's really nothing, no criticism to levy against it other than, well, it didn't personally strike me as the best movie of the year, but boy, do I respect its accomplishment. For that reason, I mean, I think it's got picture and director sewn up, honestly, because how can you argue against the accomplishment?
Well, okay, the accomplishment should not be the reason that it wins Best Picture, because we've talked
but
about
it
this.
Will
we've talked about this. The movie had to transcend the gimmick,
yes,
to be successful.
And you know,
we agree that it did.
Yes. And I think most viewers agree that
it
does.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's a great film, and I love the story, and that's what's most important. But I've been thinking about Boyhood lately and about this accomplishment that you're talking about. Hasn't Two and a Half Men done what Boyhood did in filming?
Yeah, Full House did too.
Yeah, exactly. With these television shows, a lot of them that are just successful enough to last for, say, 10 years or so, where you watch these characters age year after year, and they keep filming year after year, even more than Boyhood ended up filming. And it's impressive that they're able to pare it down to one movie and tell one story with all of that footage and all of these years of filming, and to maintain the cast and crew that they did. It's an enormous feat. But, I mean, you see it a lot in television, don't you?
So you're advocating for Two and a Half Men to win the Best Picture Academy Award?
I think justice should be done, and that it should happen. All I'm saying is that that's part of the reason we should look beyond the gimmick. Because
even beyond the gimmick.
Right.
I mean, it works, but the gimmick, I mean, the medium is the message. There
right.
is something remarkable about essentially a lifetime passing in 2.5 hours in the cinema, and not just, you know, being falsified, but actually, I mean, legitimately being the result of over a decade of work. I don't know. I mean, there's just something about that is just inherently moving.
Yeah.
Beyond, I mean, we've talked about that. I know you agree.
Yeah.
But I think that is enough.
It shouldn't be enough, though.
But I think it is.
But that's too bad, then. I
mean,
the Oscars,
what else? What other story is there that is that compelling?
Well, in that case, even though you hate Birdman, I think that the technical achievement and accomplishment of Birdman is on par with that achievement that Boyhood has.
And Birdman,
I would argue you've never seen a movie shot and executed like Birdman before.
And Birdman is going to win like Best Cinematography.
Okay, but I'm just saying, why isn't that enough for that movie? Because that movie is like nothing anybody has ever seen before, and it is a monumental achievement in cinematography.
Okay.
But there's got to be more to it than that.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. Let's look at it this way. 2010, we had the sort of epic matchup between David Fincher's cerebral, funny, enjoyable, dark The Social Network and Tom Hooper's heartwarming The King's Speech. Both of those movies, I think we both appreciated. I liked both of those a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were both ultimately more on the side of Fincher in that one, but I don't think either of us had a major problem with the King's Speech winning out there, because, you know, it's a good movie. It's well-crafted. It makes you feel good. It's entertaining. And it just, you know, leaves you with the warm fuzzies like you like sometimes. Flash forward to this year. You know, people cynically talk about something like The Imitation Game getting that King's Speech vote, right? Over the cerebral, intellectual exercise of something like Birdman. I would argue that the King's Speech vote is for Boyhood. It's the sentimental choice. I mean, it's indisputably well crafted, on top of which it's the sort of cinematic achievement that audiences and critics and casual film goers and hardcore film buffs can agree upon. It's sort of the undisputed champ this year. That's not to diminish the merits, even though you and I may disagree on them, of something like Birdman or something like The Grand Budapest Hotel or something like Gone Girl. But there's just something special about this movie. And
well,
I think it's hard to dispute.
There
that.
Is, but in that case, then come up with a special Oscar or hand IFC and Richard Linklater a certificate of accomplishment for what they did that no one else has done before, which you see with some other awards and stuff like that. But I think, like, if you go back to, say, The Artist,
uh-huh,
in 2011, which I think is a really good movie,
I think we all woke up with a massive hangover from that.
Yeah, there's no mistaking why that movie won Best Picture and why that movie had as much momentum as it did, even though it is really good. Sit back and think about it for a minute, okay? It's like nobody's ever done this before, or at least not since the 1920s or whatever. Somebody had the balls to make a movie like this and put it out there, and it really excited us again. And that's why The Artist was celebrated in the way that it was. Was it the best movie of that year? Probably not.
Yeah, no.
Okay, Boyhood, I think, for a lot of people, is the best movie of the year. And again, I'm not talking necessarily about its story right now in the movie itself, but if we want to talk about what the best movie is, let's have that conversation. Let's not talk about which is the greatest cinematic accomplishment on these specific levels. And Boyhood should be recognized for that reason.
Yeah,
Birdman should be recognized for that reason. And there are a handful of others in that conversation. But let's talk about what the best movie is and not just praise the effort.
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that Boyhood is my personal favorite movie of 2014. I haven't totally figured that out yet, but I don't think it is, pending, you know, a magical rewatch. It's up there. I can say that pretty safely. It's honestly, you know, a film that hits on pretty much every level for me. So if it were, as it seems to be, almost a unanimous choice for everyone's favorite movie of the year, in addition to its accomplishments sort of behind the scenes, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I will be too. And look, if and when this movie wins, I'm not going to have any problem with it because I love the movie. We'll all be happy. And frankly, it surprises me that the Academy is probably going to lean in this direction. I mean, if you look at this year and look ahead to the movies that were going to come out, I think the conversation would be like, wow, what an amazing achievement. But let's just focus on that for that movie and not give it Best Picture. Surely there will be other movies that pop up in the conversation and will be more worthy of this award. But then you start getting into sort of the meat and nuts and bolts of what the Best Picture is and how the Academy sees that, and it gets more complex because, I mean, if we go back and look at the winners for the past 20 years, more than likely we're really going to disagree with what was selected as the best movie of that year.
More than likely.
Yes.
But, I mean, 2014 seems to be a weird year in particular because it feels like so many of the supposed Oscar movies, and I say that in air quotes, came out and just belly flopped.
Yeah.
So many movies that I personally responded to the most are from like before August. Boyhood's one, James Gray's The Immigrant, The Lego Movie, Only Lovers Left Alive, Ida, Night Moves, even a handful of truly superlative blockbusters like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Darren Aronofsky's Noah. There were a ton of great movies that came out of Oscar season that, accordingly, with exception, again, of The Grand Budapest Hotel, are not in the conversation. And, you know, we've talked about sort of this season and all of these movies sort of being ghettoized into a 3 month or so time span that is not, I mean, I don't think it's healthy for these movies. I don't think it's helpful for Academy voters. I don't think it does anybody any favors to say, this week there are no movies, next week there are 24 movies that will be hand-delivered to you by disc. And just watch them, you know, but definitely watch one or two of these. I mean, honestly, you know, you're an average Academy voter. You may get screeners of just about everything. How many of those are you actually going to watch? You might watch, I don't know. I mean, you would hope that voters for this perform their due diligence, but we know that's not true. You're going to watch, you know, the squeaky wheel is going to get the grease there. You're going to watch the one that's gotten the most buzz,
right?
The most attention.
Yeah, it seems like more and more people sort of step up, even if they're anonymous, to say, I don't actually watch the films.
Right.
I'm just voting for it because I should.
My friend was in it,
right?
Or I heard it was good,
right,
but I didn't see it, but everybody tells me it was great. Well, great.
That's the scummy, useless nature of the Oscars, though,
yeah.
And isn't it great that we pay so much attention to it?
Yeah, I just don't think, I mean, when these movies are invariably released into wide release, why are we cramming them all into November and December again? You know, what is the deal?
And we also had the problem during the summer of cramming mm-hmm. them all in there at once, so I
which
don't
is
know.
A financial bubble that's going to burst.
Yeah.
It's not like we don't have quality cinema, especially in 2014. Again, all throughout the year.
Yeah.
Because we do. But the only movies that anybody pays attention to are released from like October 1st through, you know, I don't know, the very end of the year. And I think that's a shame.
think you'll be ready for opening tomorrow?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, previews are pretty much a train wreck. We can't seem to get through a performance without outraging fire or a raging heart on. I'm broke. I'm not sleeping, like, you know, at all. And this play kind of starting to feel like a miniature, deformed version of myself that just keeps following me around and, like, hitting me in the balls with a, like, a tiny little hammer. I'm sorry, what was the question?
Never mind.
And that's a good way to transition, I guess, into the next category of best actor. Another, not so much a performance that you hate, but a movie that you certainly do. Birdman. It seems like it's Michael Keaton and everybody else, but this is a category where it's more competitive than others this year in terms of locking down a nomination. It's a pretty crowded field, not unlike last year's best actor race, but Michael Keaton is not only getting a nomination, he's probably winning. So the next four names, who do you think fills out the category?
All right. Who I think at the moment, and, you know, remember, up until the day of nominations, everybody swore up and down Robert Redford and Tom Hanks were getting nominations. So we can only take this with the grain of salt it deserves. I think that Eddie Redmayne, who played Stephen Hawking in The Theory of Everything, is getting a nomination. I think Benedict Cumberbatch for The Imitation Game is getting a nomination. I think Jake Gyllenhaal for Nightcrawler is pretty firmly in there, and I don't think many people expected that. But honestly, I think he's kind of a threat to upset because that movie's so beloved and it's such a transformative performance. But at the very least, they'll reward him with this nomination. And there are three duking it out for that last spot. The most likely is David Oyelowo for Selma, who plays Dr. Martin Luther King. I think that he will likely show up in that fifth spot. But if not him, I think that it will either be Steve Carell for Foxcatcher, or in something of a surprise, Bradley Cooper for American Sniper. So I think those are the seven fighting for the five spots.
Yeah, I think the only two that have a puncher's chance beyond those are Timothy Spall.
Yes.
And just the tiniest percentage suggests that Ralph Fiennes could sneak in. I think it's a super unlikely thing to happen, but I think he's still, like, narrowly on the bubble.
I think that those two are fairly unlikely, but I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, if there's anybody else, it's those two. And I honestly wouldn't be tremendously shocked if Timothy Spall popped in there.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. It's possible, but I don't think so. This year is just, it's too crowded.
You think Keaton's winning?
Yeah.
I think if Nightcrawler gets a Best Picture nomination, then I'll be convinced that an upset is possible.
That's what it would take to convince me, too. But I think that Keaton is pretty unstoppable.
In a totally unpredictable race right now, at least from my perspective, Best Actress, I don't know what's going to happen. I think this is the most wide-open field there is.
I don't.
Well, who do you think? It's Julianne Moore's going to win?
Almost 100%.
Oh, I don't know, man. Nobody's seen that movie.
It doesn't matter.
Nobody's talking about that
movie.
Doesn't matter. That makes no sense.
People are talking about it, and more importantly, people are talking about her.
Yeah, for sure. She's the only reason people know that movie exists, but it hasn't come out yet.
Enough people have seen it. The people who count have seen it.
So otherwise, I think there are six actresses probably who are duking it out, other than, well, including Moore. Mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon's getting a nomination for
Definitely.
Wild. Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl?
Yes.
Felicity Jones for Theory of Everything?
Uh-huh.
And I think duking it out for that fifth spot in that case would be Jennifer Aniston for Cake, which nobody has seen, and Marion Cotillard for 2 Days, 1 Night.
I agree.
Who do you think between those two gets in?
My head says Jennifer Aniston, but my heart says Marion Cotillard.
Aw.
Jennifer Aniston apparently has a great PR team behind her.
Yeah.
And she's shown up in the precursors, but something tells me this is going to be like this year's Nicole Kidman and the Paperboy nomination. You know, the indie movie PR team is going to lose out to, well, another indie movie PR team, apparently, with Marion Cotillard. But you're right. I mean, that's, honestly, I'm not going to say the category is empty because there are a ton of super deserving female performances that are not really being talked about for nominations. But the number of women who have a realistic shot is very small.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get creative and look to, I don't know, Scarlett Johansson in Under the Skin, which they don't seem to be willing to do. That'd be fantastic by me, but I don't see it happening. It's hard to say, though, she's not just as deserving as any of those ladies in that category who do have a realistic shot.
This has to be the least competitive supporting actor field that I can remember, maybe since like 2008 when you knew who it was going to be all along. So you've got J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, Edward Norton in Birdman, and Mark Ruffalo in Foxcatcher, who seem to be the top three looking at everybody else. Mm-hmm. They're definitely getting nominated. J.K. Simmons is probably winning unless Edward Norton has something to say about it. Joining them, I'm guessing, Ethan Hawke probably gets in.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin seems like he could surprise for Inherent Vice.
Maybe.
But the name that just keeps popping up is Robert Duvall in The Judge.
So get used to The Judge being an Oscar nominee. I actually saw that movie.
Yeah.
It's not that good. And he's okay in it. But it's sort of his Robert Duvall character. And sure. I don't know. I mean, they didn't nominate him for Get Low, so they might as well nominate him for this. It's the same performance.
Who gets left out?
It would be Josh Brolin. And you know, we haven't seen Inherent Vice yet, so I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's going to be the same five that have popped up everywhere else.
Another barely competitive race is supporting actress right now. Again, it seems like it's Patricia Arquette for Boyhood and everybody else. I think if it's
can't
today...
Can't really complain about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And if that was the only award it won, then that would be great. But we assume that it's going to win more than that. But she's a great representative of the movie. It's a tremendous performance, and it probably will win. But you want to see a competitive field anyway. And right now, the only two that I see being locks here are Emma Stone and Birdman and Keira Knightley for The Imitation Game.
See, I'm not 100% sold on Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
She's pretty good in the movie, but it's not really much of a role.
Well, I feel that way about... I wouldn't say it's not much of a role. I think Emma Stone is pretty good in Birdman, mm-hmm. but is it one that I think would contend for a supporting actress nomination?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be so sure.
I would actually say Meryl Streep in Into the Woods is a lock. Not necessarily on the merits of that role, but because it's Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
And she sings, and she's good. She's probably the best part of that movie, which, hooray. But you might as well. I just, you know, I can't really get that much enthusiasm up about it, obviously. Now, I will tell you one off-the-wall contender, completely off-the-wall contender, who has a possibility of surprising due to her popularity and the movie's unlikely semi-success and semi-popularity, but most importantly, visibility. Tilda Swinton in Snowpiercer, because she is hilariously bonkers in that movie. People like her. And that was the first screener to go out to voters this year. So it could happen. Stranger things have happened.
Sure. Still have yet to see Snowpiercer. I'm sure she's great.
She's fantastic.
I hear she's great, and she's had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
She's been in a lot of really fun movies. But at this point, we're just trying to think of people to nominate, and that's probably where the Academy is, too. I mean, you have people like Laura Dern and Wilde, and just out of nowhere, when SAG nominations were announced, Naomi Watts and St. Vincent, I guess she's part of the conversation now that they nominated her.
For some reason.
So she's out there. But yeah, Jessica Chastain in A Most Violent Year, a movie we have yet to see. I don't know. I think it's just, okay, Patricia Arquette, it's over. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Mom. My life is just gonna go like that. This series of milestones, sending you off to college. You know what's next, huh? It's my funeral.
So, director, we talked about a little while ago, but again, you've got some locks in Richard Linklater, Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu. Beyond that, it gets a little hazy just because you talk about the competition at Best Picture and these movies that are vying for nominations. I think the same goes for director here, especially since it's only limited to five people. So you think or do you think Ava DuVernay is going to get a nomination?
I think she is. I also think Wes Anderson is. For the fifth spot, it will either be Morten Tildum, who is the director of The Imitation Game, or the old standard, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be the oldest Best Director nominee in history at 84.
And they love making history, right?
Yeah. You get Clint Eastwood and Ava DuVernay in there.
Fincher, I don't know. I don't see that happening this year. I think it would be really cool if Damien Chazelle got a nomination.
I mean, he could be the Ben Zeitlin pick of this year.
That would be really neat.
I feel like they'll reward him in screenplay, just as they'll reward Gone Girl in screenplay.
Okay, so speaking of screenplay, let's move on to that. You mentioned Wes Anderson may very well get a nomination for director, which would be a first, obviously. He's been nominated for screenplay before. He's never won an Oscar, and this seems like his best opportunity to win.
His best so far, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's contending with the team of writers behind Birdman, and he's contending with Richard Linklater in Boyhood, but this is kind of where the Academy likes to go far afield and reward quirkier choices. Last year's Her, Pedro Almodovar's Talk to Her, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Juno, etc.
Yeah, well, Birdman and Boyhood are going to be represented in other major categories.
Yeah. And I was looking at the categories. I think Grand Budapest Hotel has the opportunity to get 7 Oscar nominations, which would be astounding. Obviously, its below-the-line credits are pretty impeccable. You've got cinematography, you've got production design, costume design.
If it doesn't win production design, then it's a joke.
And original score.
Yeah.
But I think its sort of best above-the-line chance is in screenplay. And honestly, that's kind of my prediction to win at the moment. I mean, they could go Boyhood just to heap praise on Richard Linklater. It's been done, you know, before. They go all in on a movie like Return of the King, and they just throw Oscars at it. So it could happen, but I think if they want to spread the love around, this is where Wes Anderson will be rewarded. And for a guy who has cultivated such a particular style and who has finally hit it out of the park, at least as far as the Academy is concerned, this year, I think this will be the place to sort of reward that.
Yeah, and for all of its accomplishment and merit, the screenplay isn't what people are clamoring about when it comes to Boyhood.
Right.
The same, I think, could be said for Birdman.
It should be said for Birdman.
Well, I think there are a lot of people out there who would disagree and obviously will when this gets nominated and has a real chance at winning.
It has a chance.
Yes. It has a chance. But let's pull for Wes Anderson here. He deserves it.
Yeah. I also think Mike Lee will pop in here because he always does.
Yeah. Well, you've also got Whiplash.
Well, Whiplash has been, there's been a bit of a controversy over its classification. The Academy considers it adapted.
Oh, wasn't there a short film?
He made the short film as sort of a proof of concept to get his feature funded.
Uh-huh.
But since he made the short first, the Academy considers it an adaptation of that short.
Hmm.
So the screenplay is classified under adapted screenplay, which is probably better for Damien Chazelle because that's a weaker category.
Less competitive, yeah. Okay, so then you have Dan Gilroy's Nightcrawler script, which deserves a nomination.
I think it'll show up.
Yeah, it should. And then you've got, is Selma's considered original, isn't it?
Yes. I wonder about that.
Yeah, that's so strange that Selma would be original and Whiplash wouldn't.
It's adapted off of true things, whereas
Foxcatcher too.
Yeah, Foxcatcher is original.
Strange.
So, yeah, that's a possibility.
So, for adapted, you've got Gone Girl, Imitation Game, Wild, American Sniper.
Theory of Everything.
Yeah, and popping up out of nowhere because of perhaps these ineligibility rules in the WGA award nominations, Guardians of the Galaxy gets a nomination. I don't think that's going to happen at the Oscars.
No.
But that was a fun moment.
It was fun. You know, I guess we're just assuming that the combination of Thomas Pynchon and Paul Thomas Anderson was just too weird for everybody. We don't know.
It may be too weird for us. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, exactly. I want to bring this up, actually, because one of my favorite and less talked about movies of the Oscar season so far is Jean-Marc Vallée's Wild. I think that's a wonderful movie. And Nick Hornby does a great job with that screenplay. The screenplay for Gone Girl is great. The screenplay for The Imitation Game is great. This is a bustling category, surprisingly. And you never know what could happen with American Sniper.
Yeah.
That really appears to be the spoiler in so many categories, potentially. We just don't know. People seem to really be responding to it. And you know it's going to make bank when it opens wide because, it, you know, like, look what happened with Lone Survivor.
I was going to say, is this a sequel to Lone Survivor?
Who knows?
If it is, I want to see it.
Got this weird message that you were on a plane or something?
Yeah. I got out early.
You did? So what, are you in Germany or where?
No, I'm here. I'm stateside.
You're home? What are you doing?
I guess I just needed a minute.
Chris, the kids are dying to see you. It's been 9 months.
I'm coming home.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
Babe, come home, okay? You know, we miss you.
Okay.
Well, there's no question that Eastwood's going to have perhaps his biggest popular hit in some time, if not his biggest Oscar hit, honestly, because...
You never know.
Kind of in a dry spell since Letters from Iwo Jima.
People like him.
People do like him. He's Clint Eastwood.
I think we feel pretty good about these predictions here. I mean, if you want to toss something out in the technical categories, I mean, you mentioned Grand Budapest Hotel. Like I said, if that thing doesn't win Best Production Design, then they've failed.
They've really done something wrong.
Yeah.
Original score, there's a lot of question marks there. I mean, I've got to think that you've got Alexandre Desplat, who's probably going to show up at least twice in that category for The Imitation Game and Grand Budapest Hotel. Hans Zimmer, of course, is sort of the dominant old pro who's... Score for Interstellar, I think we can safely agree, is one of the superlative elements of that movie. I think it's a great score.
Yep.
You never know what could happen with like Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yep.
The score for Gone Girl's great. And then folks like Johan Johansson for The Theory of Everything. And though I think the music in that movie is way overbearing. And who knows what else.
Is the Birdman score eligible?
No, that would have been unusual. But I think the percussion there, it's one element too far in a movie that just prides itself on going too far. But on its own, it's pretty cool. It's kind of headache inducing after a while.
Okay. Corey.
But your precious Birdman is going
Birdman.
To win.
It's not my precious
Emmanuel
Birdman.
Lubezki, his second consecutive cinematography Oscar.
And he won't deserve it?
No, he'll deserve it.
Okay.
I mean, and I said this to you off mic, I've been showing my students The Tree of Life because I'm an awesome teacher, and it is astounding.
Now he's going to win for the film he deserved to win it for, Beyond Gravity. Even more so than Tree of Life, here now for Birdman.
I'm going to pretend that I didn't hear
we
that.
We all know it to be true.
No, we don't. Oh, I'm not even... No, you're baiting me, and I'm not going to take it.
I'm not baiting you, Corey. Okay, let's just move on. So, we've got a Best Of show coming up soon enough. Corey's seen a lot more movies than I have. I've still got a ways to go. There are probably 15 to 20 movies I still want to see before I officially call it a year. And I think I can do that before the Oscars happen.
Yeah,
maybe even halfway there. We've got a couple of months now,
mm-hmm.
thereabout, before this happens. And I usually like to do this before the Oscars are announced. So I'm going to get it done. It's going to happen. And things like Inherent Vice and Imitation Game are opening in Alabama this weekend. Imitation Game's been here for a little while now. And Selma's opening this weekend. Can't wait to see that. And there are still a handful of movies readily available to me via Netflix and other platforms. So I got some work to do, and I'm really looking forward to it because I think it's been a great year, and we'll talk about that a lot more, hopefully, on our next show, but long way to go. You've only got a handful left, right?
Yeah, only a handful.
So I want to encourage people to go to filmnerds.com today and check out Ben Stark, our friend and contributor to this show. He has his Best of the Year list all done, even though he admittedly hasn't seen a lot of movies, a lot of those that I, again, admit that I haven't seen yet, so I can't call it a year. He just went ahead and got it over with. It's a tradition for him to release his Best of 2000 or Best of the Year on New Year's Day, I believe, and he's got a really fantastic, thoroughly written list in other categories and explanations that are really well done. And I actually wanted to share a quote from it, too. And again, we've talked a lot about Wes Anderson on this show, but it's a post worth reading. But he makes a really, really salient point about Wes Anderson
And I think there are big fans of his that don't take him for granted necessarily, but maybe when you stop and think about it, even after we've watched his movies just over and over, even ad nauseum, maybe we do take him for granted at times and just sort of look forward to the next thing and whine if it's not as good as the previous one. And he says this about Wes Anderson when he talks about, I think, his number three film of 2014, Grand Budapest Hotel. He says, "I can't help but think we're all taking Wes Anderson for granted. It's mind-boggling to think about how long he has been consistently doing splendid original work that plays on screens around the world, and yet he doesn't often get mentioned in the same breath as a Scorsese, a Malick, or a Paul Thomas Anderson. He should. Not only is his prolific output eerily inspired and always refreshing, but he is also an entire generation's introduction to film as a purely auteur-driven medium." I totally agree with that.
I agree with it, too. Somebody the other night on Twitter, I guess during a Django Unchained rewatch, said something along the lines of, what a pleasure it is to live during a time when Quentin Tarantino is making movies. And I think both of us would agree with that statement, but I would also amend that to say, and Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say, and Paul Thomas Anderson, and Terrence Malick, and so many other auteurs whose styles we can point to as being so distinct. Of course, Wes Anderson, of all of these guys, his style might be the most distinct and the most sort of hermetically sealed. You know, he's sort of isolated in whatever snow globe he'd like to construct for himself, and he does it. And as each film that has come out has shown, his critics have said, well, why are you doing the same thing over and over again? And he each time responds with a middle finger saying, well, this is what I do, man.
Yeah.
This is my thing. And of course, by this point, you should hope that those people will just find somebody else to look at. But for those of us who respond to it, it's truly special.
And it hasn't been more prominent than in the Grand Budapest Hotel,
which ironically might be one of his more emotionally engaging works.
Yeah, for sure. And I've been watching it a lot lately. I got my hands on the Blu-ray. It's been coming on HBO nonstop. And this movie's just unbelievable. Yes. Like, it's perfect, and every single moment of it is just so unbelievably detailed and constructed and really executed to obviously the standard that has become Wes Anderson's. And we are also familiar with his aesthetic and what he does, and it's amazing to me to think that anybody would get tired of it.
I agree. That's the sort of movie that, well, we've got some months before we wrap this 2014 thing up, but the sort of thing we probably will talk about.
Don't get uptight with me, mate. Because if you do, I'll have to give you a dose of medicine. And if I spike you, you'll know you've been spoken to.
You wouldn't spike me. You're too mean. Besides, there's nothing invented I couldn't take.
If I medicined you, you'd think a brain tumor was a birthday present.
I could take double anything you could.
Very, very foolish words, man.
One more thing related to filmnerds.com. There was a long hiatus, you know, much like we see on this show occasionally, but I've been trying to finish this comedy shelf of shame that I started a while back, 10 comedies, essential comedies from my perspective that I had never seen before and had been ashamed that I hadn't seen up to this point. A film that I watched today, actually, and wrote about was the 1987 Bruce Robinson movie With Nail and I.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever seen that?
I haven't, actually.
Highly recommend it,
yeah.
Actually. It's this actor Richard E. Grant's mm-hmm. film debut, and it's a really personal, very English film about friendship and alcoholism, and it has a lot to say about many big themes, but it's also really darkly hilarious, so I encourage people to check it out. It was one well worth checking out and putting on the shelf of shame and taking off at this point. So check it out. Check us out on iTunes. Visit us at aspectradioshow.com. Follow us at Aspect Radio on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. Read Corey's work now on
artsbham.com. That's artsbham.com. Arts Birmingham, a new website that I write film reviews for sometimes. So I'll have a review of Selma up likely by the time this drops. And hopefully by the end of the weekend, my top some number of 2014.
And what site is that again?
artsbham.com.
Very good. My stuff's on al.com, so check that out. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Andrew Richardson. And until next time, I am Ben Flanagan.
And I'm Corey Kraft. This has been Aspect Radio. Thank you for listening.